May the words of my mouth and the meditations of all our hearts be acceptable in your sight, O Lord, our rock and our redeemer. What could be a happier focus for our Bible readings this morning than a wedding? In fact, two weddings. In our Old Testament reading, the prophet Isaiah describes the new relationship between Israel and God as a marriage. I tend to use the New Revised Standard Version, so my wording's a little different from what Barry read. And God gives the bride, who is of course Israel, a delightful name. My delight is in her, which is in fact Hephzibah. Some of you may know that Yehudi Menuhin's sister was Hephzibah. And then the other name that God gives is happily married, Beulah. Where I come from, there's a lot of chapels called Beulah. But of course, it's the very familiar story from the New Testament which really captures our imagination. Jesus, along with his mother and the disciples, are guests at a wedding in Cana, a small town a few miles from Nazareth. And we can, I think, assume that like any wedding, it would have been a joyous celebration with plenty of food and drink at the feast, which would have followed the ceremony. Except that, on this occasion, perhaps through inadequate planning, the all-essential wine runs out. A disaster for the host, as it would have reflected badly on his reputation for generous hospitality. But the day is saved by Jesus performing his first miracle, though hardly anybody knew that it had happened, and he turns 6 jars of water into the most wonderful wine. This story is only told in John's Gospel, and it's the first of 7 miracles performed by Jesus to show who he really is, that he is the Messiah. And we only hear this story, though we all know it so well, we only actually hear it once every 3 years when it pops up in the sequence of readings that we use known as the lectionary. On the face of it, it's a very happy story with a particularly happy ending. But if we think about it a little more deeply, there is actually a much more serious question lurking beneath the surface. And it's also there in our reading from Isaiah. For there are details of the story of the wedding feast which are distinctly troubling. I'm sure you know what I mean. It's Mary, though she's never actually named in John's Gospel, she's always known just as the mother of Jesus, who realises that something is amiss. And then she discovers that the wine has run out, and she immediately asks Jesus to help. I think actually this in itself raises interesting questions about what she already knows about Jesus' ability to work miracles. There are some wonderful, I don't know whether you'd call them folk tales, but there are other gospels, of course, apart from the ones we all know. There are some smaller things, and they have these sorts of stories of things that Jesus did as a child. But that aside, Jesus' response to his mother is not what we might expect. Woman, what concern is that to you and to me? My hour is not yet come. Now, on the face of it, it's actually rather rude, especially to a parent, and not at all what we would expect from Jesus. He seems to be distancing himself from his human family, as well as stating it's not yet time to show who he is. And perhaps we might also say that as miracles go, turning water into wine has more than a little air of magic about it, rather than a demonstration of Jesus' divine power, perhaps in a more spiritual context. So what message should we be taking from this story? Well, perhaps controversially, I think it raises a difficult question about how God responds to us when we are in need. Let's turn back to our verses from Isaiah for a moment. This part of the book of Isaiah was written after the people who'd been in exile in Babylon had returned to Israel. They'd come home full of hope and joy, but they'd also come home to a land which had been ruined, with the temple in Jerusalem completely destroyed. Rebuilding was slow and difficult, and there were endless obstacles and delays. So the high hopes were becoming broken dreams and crumbling faith. What had happened to God's promises? Was he really going to help the nation he called his people? It has been suggested that the opening words of chapter 62 are not, as we might expect, the voice of God speaking through his prophet, but rather the voice of Isaiah himself, having a go at God. For Zion's sake, I will not keep silent. For Jerusalem's sake, I will not rest until her vindication shines out like the dawn and her salvation like a burning torch. And then what follows, ending with the image of a marriage, is God's response to the prophet's heartfelt cry. And I should think that many, if not all of us, have at some point been where Isaiah is. You may even be there now. I cannot be alone in asking why God allows so much poverty and suffering. Or why, just a few days ago, another boy, this time aged only 14, was killed by a gang in Walthamstow. Why does our world seem so broken? We pray, but does God hear? And if he hears, is he really listening? Sometimes it feels as though we're contacting a heavenly call centre, only to be told, heaven is experiencing a very heavy volume of calls at the moment, and all our angel advisors are busy. But your call is important to us, so please hold until the next available angel can talk to you. Alternatively, please look at our website where you will find helpful ideas of things you can do to help God change the world. And of course, we just end up feeling helpless and frustrated. So how can today's readings help us to cope when we find ourselves feeling like that? Well, first, and I'm sure not everyone will agree with me about this, and no doubt you'll tell me so over coffee, I think that sometimes we do need to have it out with God. There are plenty of people in the Bible who argued with God. Jacob, you know the story where he wrestles, literally. Moses, and St. Paul, who actually did it all the time, I think. He was always not happy about, I mean, he suffered from some sort of illness which was kept recurring, and he was very cross about this. It was a constant dialogue, I think. These are obvious examples, and we also have to remember that Jesus himself spent time alone with God very frequently, perhaps seeking guidance and answers. Our own relationship with God cannot simply be a passive one. Faith itself challenges us all the time, becoming a dynamic force in our lives and shaped by the times when we engage with God. I believe that sometimes we need to argue with or question God in order to help us work through difficult situations and sometimes decisions and reach a resolution. It may take a long time, years even, but it will get us there in the end. And secondly, both of our readings show us that God is listening, and we will receive a response. Isaiah is assured that, although it will take time, recovery will come, and Israel will be restored. And while, even though we're not told why Jesus changed his mind, his response at the wedding feast is a very, very generous one, and I'll come back to that in a moment, we have to be prepared for the possibility that the response we're looking for does not materialise when we want it to. God's answer may be not yet. The main interview in the current edition of Reform is with Melba Patillo. Those of us of a certain age may remember that in 1957, as a result of a US Supreme Court ruling that segregation was unconstitutional, a group of 9 African American children were allowed to join the all-white high school at Little Rock, Arkansas. Melba, aged 15, was one of the group. The children were in such danger that troops had to be brought in to protect them, to take them into school in the morning and to get them home in the evening. In the end, certainly Melba was taken to California to a foster family to finish her education because things just got too difficult. It was very, very tough. But Melba learned 2 lessons from her experience. When she asked her grandmother, "Why doesn't God fix it?" the answer was, "In God's time, not yours. What God is doing is for the benefit of everyone. You're not his only client." And later, as her education progressed, Melba met Martin Luther King, who told her, "You're not doing this for yourself. Do not be selfish. You're doing it for generations as yet unborn." Thirdly, I think that when we lay all the problems of the world before God, we just can't expect him to put things right when the reason for the problems lies in the hands, beliefs and actions, there's a long list, of human beings. God's response has to be to guide and support us so we can act for him. At the wedding feast, Mary tells the servants, "Do whatever he tells you." And surely that's the message to us as well. Listen to God and act on what he says. We are God's servants, and therefore we're not so much the need as the answer to the need. It was actually at New Year. You know that I live in the city centre and I've got to know quite a number of the big issue sellers. And there's a new chappie by the market called Chris. And the chappie who used to be there, William, has moved up to John Lewis. And it was just before New Year and there they both were having a chat. So I stopped to buy my copy. And I said, "I don't know about this, but can I wish you a Happy New Year?" And William said, "Of course you can. And can you give me a hug?" And then, having done that, Chris said, "Can I have one too?" Now, earlier in the conversation, they told me about people who walked past them in Gentleman's Walk with their handbags. And I thought, I hope people see me doing this, giving a hug. Maybe somebody saw and thought about it. There's still one final thing to be said, and it takes us back to the 6 huge water jars at the wedding feast, and as we're told, they were there to provide water for the guests to do the ritual washing, which was for the observance of Jewish traditions. And we're also told that they each held 30 gallons. So I leave you to work out how much wine that actually was. We don't need, perhaps, to do the sums to calculate that this was a more than generous response. Probably one jar would have been enough. And it reminds us just how generous God can be. If we think about our lives, we can all recall times when we have experienced his love, his grace, and his forgiveness, often hardly deserved. Hard though it sometimes is, we should never allow despair at all the bad things in the world to hide the good things. So, does God hear us? Is he listening? The answer is most certainly yes. Does he mind us having a moan at him? Well, I think the answer to that question has to be no. For if we cannot engage with God and he with us, then our relationship with him is the poorer. And though we may never be able to change water into wine, with hope and faith, we can often do more to change things than we think. Amen.